Channel 4 Films and Miramax Films present a Steve Abbott, Mark Herman Prominent Features production. Circular lights bob across the screen as the cast credits appear. Pete Postlethwaite, Tara Fitzgerald, Ewan McGregor. The lights multiply until they appear as the lamps on coal miners' hats emerging out of the darkness. Blast off. Men drill and shovel coal in a cramped and dusty mine. One unhooks a bottle of water from a pipe and unscrews the cap. Hardy, blackened faces grin at one another through the murky semi-darkness in a cramped lift cage. Leaving the cage, each man places a coin into the palm of a man waiting at the top. Wearing orange boiler suits, translucent safety jackets and hard hats, the men file out of the colliery. Brass music performed by the Grimthorpe Colliery Band. Jim Carter, Ken Colley, Peter Gunn, Mary Healy. Melanie Hill, Philip Jackson, Sue Johnston, Peter Martin, Stephen Moore, Lil Roughly, and Stephen Tomkinson. The men walk across the colliery yard to a large warehouse-type building where they remove their lamps, hats, and other equipment. Casting Priscilla John, Julia Duff. The men scrub up in a communal shower room. Two wash each other's backs with a cloth. One man, Harry, puts the finishing touches to his carefully oiled and combed coiffure, only for it to be ruffled by a colleague, Phil. Harry scowls. The men head home. A banner reading, "Victory to the Miners," is attached to a fence beneath the sign for Grimley Main Colliery. The men head past an encampment of women who hover around a tent on which is written, "No to pit closure." Five men piled in a car honk and wave as they pass two elderly women wrapped in sleeping bags by a makeshift stand, under a poster reading, "Women Against Pit Closure." Original music by Trevor Jones, co-producer Olivia Stewart, produced by Steve Abbott. Gloria, a young woman in her 20s, steps out of a car, carrying several suitcases and heads into a pub, The Lantern, written and directed by Mark Herman. Inside the pub,
a few days, you say?
Mrs. Betty Foggan.
Not what I'd call a night traveller, I bet.
Sorry, it's mainly work.
I wouldn't apologise for having work, Power. Not round here.
She shows Gloria into a room, then holds up a small case.
What's this, then?
It's just a flugel. A trumpet. I thought I might get some practice in.
In here, you mean?
Well, whatever.
Oh, I wouldn't mind, pet. Don't get me wrong. If it were up to me, there's no tad light better than to hear you blowing that bloody thing all night long.
Oh, no, it wouldn't.
You've heard of Grimley Colliery Band?
Yes, I have.
Well, they have their own practice hall. I should get myself down there, pet. They'd welcome someone like you with open arms, knowing them.
Andy, a miner in his 20s, good-looking with sandy hair and sideburns, smokes a cigarette and watches through narrowed eyes as a mate, Simo, beats him at pool, picks up his winnings, then holds up a fiver and looks at him.
Another?
Housewife Vera is collecting her washing.
It's a sad old day, isn't it, V? When it's finally come to this.
What's that then, Ida?
Your Jim and my Ernie packing in band.
They are doing it then? For definite?
Aye. Last practice tonight, Ernie said. Then resigning after.
Oh, well, no point in carrying on, is there? Pit goes, band'll go the same way. Oh, I feel sorry for old Danny, mind. He'll have bugger all to do.
We'll all have bugger all to do, V.
You get used to it.
A neighbour sits in the interlinking yard between the two women, smoking a fag and reading his newspaper. Danny, balding with a large nose and prominent cheekbones, wearing his bandmaster jacket of purple with gold trim and black lapels and cuffs, ties his shoelace, picks up his bicycle and wheels it out of his backyard. He cycles off down a street. Harry's wife Rita pulls a front door closed and heads out to join the Women Against Pit Closure protest. Harry passes her on his way home.
All right, love.
Hi, all right.
Vera's husband, Jim, a tall, broad man with brown hair, carries a tuba out of his house. Ida calls out to him.
Don't forget what you're doing, you lads. Don't be handing over any kitty money.
Just resignations.
Aye, all right, Bert.
Mind you do.
What do you mean, mind you do? But our decision, won't it, love?
Aye, well.
Jim heads out the gate.
Just mind you do.
Jim walks away with Ernie, Ida's husband, a short, stocky man holding a tuba.
Now, let's get this right, Ernie. When he collects Spot Kitty, we say, sorry, Danny, but us two, we've decided in present climate to tighten our belts like and only spend money on essential items. Sorry, it's been good and all that, but right now we don't regard band as one of aforementioned essential items.
And regretfully, therefore, we feel obliged to tender our resignations forthwith.
Right?
Right.
They nod to each other resolved.
And then we wake up in casualty.
They eye each other diffidently. Danny cycles along a path through a park, with the small town of Grimley spread out before him. Jim looks at Ernie, musing.
Well, if he goes by me, it's not our fault, is it?
No.
I mean, what's the worst he can do?
Have an heart attack?
Ah, what the hell. If Danny don't like it, bollocks to him.
All right, lads.
Oh, all right, Danny, mate.
Danny cycles past them with a wave.
60 years between us, you and me, down pit. Frightened and out. When it comes to telling Danny boy we're packing band in,
we're shitting bloody bricks.
They sigh and walk on. Gloria unpacks her suitcases.
And coming up later in the news, continuing our regular reports on the government's pit closure programme, we visit Grimley Colliery, which, despite being one of the oldest and largest mines in the Yorkshire coalfield, has nevertheless become the most recent candidate for closure. Although the Grimley miners, and indeed their wives, appear very determined to fight on and keep their pit open, a redundancy offer to the workforce is believed to be imminent.
The women of Grimley staged their protest.
United will never be defeated! The miners, united, will never be defeated!
Other redundancy offers at neighbouring pits recently have been too attractive for the miners to ignore. In the last few weeks, 7 payoff packages have been offered to 7 pits. All accepted, leading to 7 closures.
Trouble is, I'm no bloody happier when I'm winning.
Andy loses at pool.
Double acquits. No, best not. It's Kitty night tonight.
He's watching the TV.
Cheer up, Andy. Might never happen.
Representatives of union and management meet tonight to discuss the redundancy offer to be put to the Grimley miners.
Bloody going to, though, ain't it? See ya.
See ya.
Phil's at home with his wife and kids.
Don't be a pillock all your life. Take money while it's still on offer.
Hey, there's a lot of folk out there wouldn't like to hear where you're talking, love.
Ah, and they're all as daft as you are. All end up winning out, just like us.
Philip! Phil peers out the window to see his father Danny waiting for him at the gate.
Late for practice. We'll talk about it later, eh?
Later? You'll still be saying later when we're out on bloody street!
She's got her back to Phil.
There's always Mr. Chuckles.
His wife bristles.
I can do more than that.
Phil! No. Phil! Phil! You have a wife and 4 bloody kids in a house nobody'll bloody buy. Mortgage up to the bloody hilt. Loan sharks on our backs. No bloody money. No bloody job. And what are you going to do? Fucking juggle!
She flings a plate at him.
A bit clumsy with the crockery, old Sandra.
Sandra fumes. Harry heads out as Rita heads in.
All right, love.
All right.
Harry hesitates as though to say something to her, then walks on. Phil rides on the back of Danny's bike, hanging on precariously to his trombone. Danny cycles on, staring intensely ahead, with his cheeks and lips puffing in and out as he hums to himself. He holds an arm out to indicate turning, but carries on humming, conducting some notes with a hand gesture, tilting and nodding his head with total concentration. Behind him, Phil puffs his cheeks out and joins in. The Grimley Colliery Band are in full swing, holding aloft their gleaming brass instruments, cornets, horns, trombones, euphoniums, sitting in neat rows playing in harmony from sheet music. There's Harry on euphonium, Andy on tenor horn, and Phil on trombone. Danny stands in front of them, jacket off and sporting a black tie with the crest of the Grimley Colliery Band on it, conducting with an earnest passion. A purple and gold painted banner hangs behind him. Phil, with a beanie hat pulled firmly on his head, fumbles with his trombone. Danny points at him and throws him a scolding look, then carries on to the end of the piece.
Crap. That's what that was. A load of bloody crap.
What did Eric Morecambe say? All the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. What happened to you, son?
Just fell apart.
Aye, well, you're not the only one. Andy, lad, all over the shop you were. What is up with you lot?
Got our minds on other things, Danny.
Like what?
Blimey, Danny, you been on holiday or what?
How do you mean?
Well, it may have escaped your notice, like, but Pitt's under threat.
Aye. What's that got to do with us?
Oh, aye, you're right. Not a lot.
Harry sighs. Andy shakes his head, bemused.
Now, listen to me, all of you. These are worrying times, I know that. Well, look what it says here.
The crest on his tie.
1881. Over 100 years this band's been going. Two world wars, three disasters, seven strikes, one bloody big depression, and band played on every flaming time.
Danny, this is biggest disaster at lot.
Can't have a colliery band without a bloody colliery, can you?
Listen, we've got the national semi-finals coming up, and we're capable, I mean it, well capable of going through to London. The first time in our history. The Albert Hall. Now, I know there's a spot of bother at the pit, but that's somewhat separate. This is music, and it's music that matters.
Unconvinced, Phil sighs.
Now, come on, Kitty, for the weekend.
Jim stands up.
Danny, me and Ern, we've been thinking it over like. I know subs aren't much, but present climate and that.
What are you saying, Jim?
Well, me and Jim have made a decision.
Ernie's distracted as Gloria enters the room. Danny looks up.
Hello, love. Can we help?
Is this the colliery band rehearsal?
No, love. Band's on Tuesdays. Tonight's origami class.
Down an orchard flower. Can I help?
I'm staying at the pub. I play the flugel. Well, sort of dabble. Mrs. Foggan said... Well, she said you might let me play with you.
Down, boy, down.
Jim sits.
Well, I know it may sound like we need all the help we can get, but I'm sorry, love. I mean, usually, as a rule, we don't allow, you know, outsiders.
I understand that, except I'm not strictly an outsider. I were born in Grimley.
Is that right, love? What's your name?
Gloria.
Gloria...
Stitz. Eh? Gloria Stitz.
Ernie.
Ernie pulls a face.
Mullins. Gloria Mullins.
No.
Danny stares at her.
Arthur's Gloria.
You're Danny, aren't you?
Aye.
He shakes his head.
I didn't think you'd still be...
Alive and kicking? Oh, I love just about.
No, I meant leading the band.
Yes. Well, come in, park yourself somewhere.
Danny steps up to a photograph on the wall.
If you didn't know him, you'd have heard of him. Arthur Mullins. This young lady's granddad. Best bandsman I ever played with. Bravest miner I ever worked with.
He looks at the photo.
Closest friend I ever had. Till his lungs packed in 79.
He looks at Gloria.
Sorry, love.
It's true.
She sits beside Andy.
Good to see you back. Excuse me a moment, Gloria. I'm just collecting.
He holds out his hat for contributions.
Jim, what were you saying? You and Ernie. Something about present climate.
I was saying, like, despite present climate, you can always rely on our continued and wholehearted support for the cause.
Oh, aye. Solidarity, thick and thin and all that.
To Jim.
Then it's a fiver.
Jim reluctantly pulls out another fiver and throws it into the hat.
Solidarity.
Andy smiles shyly at Gloria.
Do you remember me?
Gloria narrows her eyes and tilts her head.
Barry? Barry Andrews?
Andy Barrow.
Andy Barrow. Good, you haven't changed a bit.
You have.
She opens her flugel case.
What are you up to now, then?
Oh, this and that, you know. Keep him busy.
She takes out her flugel. On his rounds for contributions, Danny spots it.
Hey, that's not... Is it?
He left it me in his will. Couldn't let it go to Russ, could I? Clever old sod. Even when he were gone, he made sure I'd take it up.
Well, I know it won't be the same, but it'd be lovely just to hear it again.
OK.
What do you know?
Well, I've been practising Rodrigo's Concerto d'Aranjuez.
You what?
To Harry.
Orange juice to you.
Why?
I'm a bit wobbly still.
Don't you fret, pet. Wobbly be too good for this lot.
Danny walks round to the front.
Paul, music. Bernie, get to a stand.
Andy watches Gloria admiringly.
OK, everyone.
Gloria flexes her mouth and stands up.
All right. Are we all together?
Andy's gawping at Gloria.
Andy, lad, are you with us?
Andy doesn't hear. Andy turns round.
Poor lad. Still got your mind on that pit?
Andy smiles and lifts his tenor horn to his lips.
All right, lads. Rodrigo's Concerto d'Orange Juice.
The lads ready themselves to play. glory on Flugel. While they play, the future of their colliery is discussed by the suited grey-haired colliery manager Mackenzie, a balding, sunken-eyed union rep Greasley and his mustachioed colleague, and various other British Coal Board executives in a heated discussion around a board table. As Gloria plays, the men share astonished glances with one another. It's dark. A TV crew and news hacks gather round Mackenzie as he makes his way out of the board's general offices and is ushered towards a car. Grim-faced union reps are interviewed by the press. With sad but determined smiles, they're applauded by those surrounding them as they walk on. And the band play on. Lost in the music, Danny closes his eyes momentarily as he conducts his band. Danny looks at Gloria, his face etched with emotion, then turns to his band.
She calls that wobbly.
He looks at Gloria and begins to clap. Gloria gives an embarrassed smile.
I'm doing anything the weekend, though.
Gloria shakes her head.
Right, lads, listen up. Saddleworth tomorrow. 14 villages, love. Contest in each, all at the same time, like cash prizes. So, any road, lads? Big chance to swell the coffers tomorrow, so we're going for all 14. Are you on, love?
She eyes the others.
If I'm allowed.
Don't be selfless. You were born here.
Andy gazes up at her. A grim street of cramped, run-down houses and backyards. Danny, in his bandmaster uniform, walks across his kitchen and sets a leather satchel down. Struggling across the room, he grabs up a handkerchief, holds it to his mouth, and spits into it. He lowers the handkerchief and looks at it in horror. As the wheels of the mine spin round, Greasley and other union reps address the miners at a meeting.
It's a profitable pit, this! There's hundreds of years of coal down there, but it don't seem to matter to them bastards. We're making money for them hand over fist, we are, and still they want to shut us down.
Well, tell them bollocks to them.
Well, that's up to you lot, isn't it, lad?
Well, thank Christ, it ain't up to you.
Phil explains.
Oh, well, Jesus, they shouldn't have even let us they ought to be put on table. They're just bloody puppets, that lot. They do whatever the bastards want.
Phil, lad.
Yeah, well, we didn't do what the bastards wanted in 84, did we? Yeah, we dug our heels in then, didn't we? And some of us got bloody locked up for it.
Big bloody deal.
Phil turns on his heckler.
Suspended hour. It took that lot a year and a half to get me reinstated. That's 18 months on bloody strike pay. With a wife, bloody kids, mortgage.
It's 10 years ago, pal.
Aye, 10 years. And now we're that bloody broke, I'm still frigging paying for it. That's how big a fucking deal it was.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, where were you then, eh, pal? In 84. I don't remember seeing you online.
The heckler looks away.
Oh, aye. We all know which way you'll be voting. Come on, then, you bastard! Any time! Get up, buddy!
Both men are held back by their colleagues. Greasley stands up. Suited and with a world-weary expression, he raises his hands to the miners.
Hey, hey, listen! That's just what they're bloody wanting. You know that, don't you?
Harry settles Phil.
All right, this is what you've got. Ballot next week, right? You've got two options. One, you can vote to take Pitt to review procedure. Obviously, that's one we want you to take, because we reckon you've got a decent chance in review. Or two, you can vote to take payoff.
Listen,
they told us last night that redundancy offers gone up 3,000 from a 20 grand maximum to 23 with a 5 grand sweetener.
Phil's resolute weakens. He lowers his gaze, then raises his head and protests.
This is only a temporary offer. If you say no to it and stay put, they're pulling any future offer down to a flat 15. Right, there you are. Born bastards, stay bastards. Well, all right, boys, don't you're shouting now, lads. Do it next week in the ballot. Say no to bloody blackmail.
Harry nods.
And yes to keeping this bit alive.
Jim and Ernie respond enthusiastically. Harry nods. Phil claps and eyes his heckler sardonically. Andy sighs and looks round at his colleagues, then hangs his head. Jim drives Ernie, Harry, Andy and Phil home in his car. They honk and wave to the women's protest group as they pass.
The miners united will never be defeated!
Poor old biddies. Don't they know they're pissing in the wind like the rest of us?
Ernie looks back at Andy.
Can they do that, women?
What?
Piss in the wind.
No, Ernie, that's just the point.
Ernie stares at Jim.
No, but you're a nice day, you know, when there's no wind about. They can't, you know, go any direction on
it. All right, then, whatever it is that lasses do, that's pointless.
Bloody hell, so much to choose from.
Fart in a force 10.
My God, Phil, you don't half know some funny women.
Harry.
Steady, lads, my missus does that.
The battered blue Vauxhall rounds a corner.
Oh, you damn bastards. Women against closure.
And drives on through the streets of Grimley.
She's not farting
in a force 10. Rita closes the front door and heads on down the garden as Harry's on his way in.
Hi, love.
See ya.
As she passes, he pauses and looks round at her. She strides on. Resignedly, Harry heads inside. Jim's wife, Sandra, prepares to go out.
If I don't have a day away on my own, I'm going to go frigging barmy. Honest, I am. I'll kill someone.
We'll go somewhere tomorrow, eh?
Bill! I'm off today, or I'm off for good. Give me some money.
She holds out her hand to him.
Oh, my love, I've only got a tenner.
Tenner'll do.
She gestures him to give it. Phil reluctantly gets it out.
But it's Saddleworth. I mean, Dad'll kill me if I don't turn up.
And I will if you do.
She hands him a baby.
Ain't life just shit?
Grabs the tenner and goes.
On your head, Dad.
A football hits Phil. Gloria lies on her bed in the pub watching the TV.
Of course the offer's attractive. It's tantamount to bribery. They're not messing around.
She gets up to answer the door.
For whatever reason, nobody knows. And they think that by
it's Mrs. Foggan.
This just came for you. Oh.
She hands a plastic seal garment on a hanger to Gloria. She closes the door to Mrs. Foggan's surprise, unzips the plastic and takes out a Grimley colliery band, purple jacket and black skirt. Phil's son peers out a window and watches his father chat to two men over the garden fence. One man prods Phil threateningly. Gloria stands in front of a mirror dressed in the Grimley colliery band outfit. She listens to Mackenzie on the TV.
If it has a sound economic future, then we shall abide by that decision and work towards it. Naturally. Nobody wants Grimley to close.
Gloria nods reflectively at Phil's home.
Oh, I'm bloody starving, aren't you?
He heads to the kitchen.
See what we got.
He finds a tin.
Dad, who that?
Oh, just a couple of fellas.
He bustles about.
Are you in trouble, Dad?
Eh?
Your dad in trouble.
Look like they were going to smack you.
Phil looks at his son.
Aye, they were, lad.
He lifts him up onto the kitchen counter.
They were from council. Leisure department. They said that if we don't have fun today, we are in big, big trouble.
Dad, I'm 8 and a half now.
Phil frowns.
Are you? Well, you can help me find bastard tin opener then, can't you?
Andy and Simo are playing pool.
Gloria Mullins. What, Melon's Mullins? The Doug Donnero, chubby lass. We used to sing that hymn, Gloria in XL.
That's her, except she's far from chubby now, like.
I remember her.
Andy's poised to shoot.
You had her, behind the bus station.
No, I never.
You told us you did.
No, it were top half only.
Simo, bearded and overweight, gets up to shoot.
Hey, does she remember?
Does she, Ellis, like? Couldn't even remember me bloody name.
Yeah, get away. Bet that's why she's come back. To complete unfinished business.
Gloria comes in. She smiles over at Andy, who smiles back. Simo shoots a ball and looks up.
Are you smiling at? Another.
Andy's lost again.
Oh, I go on then.
Jim and Journey pass Spar supermarket with their instruments. Ida and Vera spot them.
What the bleeding hell are you two doing?
The two men look sheepish.
We fancied a game of golf, like.
You daft golfheads. You never resigned, did you? Sat there like a couple of old biddies and paid over money, didn't you?
Old Danny talked us round, like. They were very persuasive. We had no option, lover, honestly.
No bollocks, more like.
The women march off.
I reckon it was something to do with bollocks that got us to stay.
The women natter.
No bloody gumption, them two. Oh, soup for brains, the pair of them.
Gloria.
Excuse me. Where's the collier's arms? Hanging off his shoulders, pet.
The old ones are the best, eh?
Oh, it's the young ones we worry about, love. Off to Saddleworth, are you?
That's right.
Follow them two daft apeths.
Ta.
Gloria walks on, following Jim and Ernie.
Hey, love.
Yeah?
Joined band last night, did you?
Yeah, how did you know that?
Oh, just something my husband never said.
Gloria gives her a radiant smile and heads on, wiggling her shapely bottom as she goes. The other women watch her go.
Aye, I am. What? Thinking what you're thinking.
They watch Gloria sashaying down the street. The Colliery band members pile into a bus that reads Arkwright Travel, New York, London, Paris and Grimley, but mainly Grimley, on the back. Danny checks his watch and ticks them off as they arrive.
Hello, lads.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Paul.
Jim arrives with kids on tow.
Oh, tell me you're bloody joking, son, please.
Sorry, Dad, it's all of us or none at all.
Why, for Christ's sake?
Who are them men from? Pleasure department, Grandad.
The kids pile onto the bus.
You what?
Anyway, not wrong with a bit of vocal support, eh?
Jim carries the baby onto the bus. Gloria totters up.
Hey, up, lass. I hope you feel as good as you look.
I'm nervous.
Hey, get away with you. Your granddad will be proud of you. Go on, in you get.
He watches her curvaceous bottom as she climbs in. The bus driver shouts at him.
Hey, ogle eyes. Is that a lot?
No. No. Just one more. That's bloody usual.
Harry.
Poor lass. All she wants is a nice day out and she gets stuck between them two bullies.
Gloria sitting in the back between Jim and Ernie.
Oh, shit. Sorry, Harry.
Come here, darling.
That's a lot, Kylie.
The baby's been sick on Harry's jacket.
There you go, mate.
He takes the baby and hands Harry a nappy to wipe up the sick.
Hey, up, look. Here comes fast bloody Eddie now. Come on, Andy, lad, step on it.
Andy runs up and climbs in. To the bus driver.
All right, Stanley, that's the lot.
What about these two here?
Dressed in purple, Vera and Ida scurry up.
Bloody hell.
Danny, lad, it's nearest colours we could find.
What are you doing?
We've just found it, fan club.
Well, I don't think we... Oh, look, ladies, I mean, this is traditionally a male-only excursion, you know that.
New lass on board, is she?
Aye, that's different. I mean, she's very talented.
Aye, I know. We saw her.
I'll have you know, that girl blows flugel like a dream.
Danny Albandroid, at your age.
Fury pushes Ida onto the bus.
What?
Jim's leaning over Gloria.
Come on, love, it's not what's my line.
Well, I'm a surveyor.
I'm a what? You mean like a quantity surveyor?
Kind of.
Want to survey my quantity, love?
Gloria's eyes flick down.
Well, I do say no job too small.
Get away, love. Take your bloody fortnight, this one.
As they all fall apart, Jim looks up to see Vera and Ida looming over them.
We are lover, honest. Shift up, Duck.
Andy.
Hey, up, Phil. Groupies are on.
To the end, Andy.
Sex, drugs and rock and roll, eh, girls?
Ah, except we can do without drugs and rock and roll.
Jim and Ernie are unamused. The town of Saddleworth, nestling in a green valley surrounded by hills. Crowds gather along the streets to watch and listen to the brass bands marching past. From all over the region, smartly dressed bands wearing black, blue, yellow and red jackets are accompanied by mounted police along the route through the old stone-walled town. Danny leads the Grimley Colliery band forward, jaw firmly set with determined passion. He vigorously waves his baton as he goes. Resplendent in their purple jackets and black trousers, the band march cheerily forward. Phil comes up the rear with his trombone, carrying his youngest child on his back in a papoose. Beside him march his three other children, followed by Vera and Ida. A grey-haired bearded official holds up a board as they pass that reads, "Winner Yorkshire Building Society Band, Dub Cross." With crowds gathered round to listen, Danny conducts his band by a canal. He casts his eyes down anxiously as a board is held up that announces Upper Mill Village Delphi Band as a winning band. Outside a pub, Jim hands a couple of pints to Harry. Andy and Gloria chat together while Jim leans a little too close to Gloria. Vera pulls him away.
Come on, Jim.
Later, Jim affectionately hooks his arm round Vera's neck. Andy and Gloria share a laugh and all of the band unwind outside the pub, except Danny, who looks preoccupied. The Grimley Colliery Band's men line up behind a bridge wall to relieve themselves. Vera, Ida and Gloria tease them. Danny shakes his head at the antics. Later, the band parade along the streets of Saddleworth, this time in a higgledy-piggledy fashion, a little worse for wear. Some down pints as they go. This time, one of Phil's sons sits on his shoulders. Danny watches a scoreboard being held up announcing a winner, Fairies Band. Then another board pops up with another winner, Brighouse and Rastrick Band. Danny conducts his band and watches with barely concealed hurt and anger as Phil's trombone falls apart. Children watching sit on their parents' shoulders and jiggle about. Phil struggles with his trombone to his father's consternation. Andy titters as he plays. Gloria struggles to suppress her giggles as she blows her flugel. Onlookers watch bemused as the Grimley Colliery Band appear to fall apart. Danny lowers his baton and stops conducting, then hangs his head in mortification. Later that night in the Grimley practice hall.
Laughing! They were bloody laughing at us! I mean, look at them. If some of them were alive today, they'd be turning in the bloody graves, they would. And if Arthur Mullins was looking down on us, well, God bloody help us, that's all I can say. I mean, is this what it's come to, eh? Bits of trombone flying all over the shop. Stopping march to change bloody nappies. Too bloody bevy to stay on buggering bandstand. We may as well all bloody give up.
I reckon we already had, Dan. That's kind of why it went like it did.
Reckon we thought we'd go out on a high note. I've now an idea of a high note's a bit different from yours, like.
Go out? What are you talking about, Ernie? Go out.
Danny, lad, you've got to face it. If Pitt goes, band goes with it.
When Pitt goes?
If.
Andy looks at Gloria.
However Ballot goes, they'll still close the bugger.
Not necessarily. Depends on...
Andy looks at her in surprise.
On that review thingy. Surely.
Andy frowns.
Trouble with you lot is you've got no pride. And you know one thing, more than aught else round here that symbolises pride, it's this bloody band, that's what. Ask anybody. I mean, if they close down the pit, eh? Knock it down, fill it up, like they've done with all bloody rest, no trace. Years to come, there'll only be one reminder of 100 bloody years hard graft. This bloody band. Oh, they can shut up the unions, they can shut up the workers, but I'll tell you one thing for nothing, they'll never shut us up. We'll play on. Loud as ever, starting with national semis in Halifax. Win them and we can carry our heads high and march on to the Albert Bloody Hall, all right? Now, are we playing or are we packing in?
Playing.
The rest of the band look at Gloria but say nothing. She glances round.
Sorry.
No, don't you worry, Flower. You've nought to be ashamed of.
He glances round at the men.
No bugger else, then?
Phil casts his eyes down shiftily. Harry stands up.
Danny,
I reckon I speak for everybody. We'll play on while pit's open. The minute they close it, we pack it in.
Quite.
You can't ask for more than that.
Here.
No.
He looks around.
Obviously not.
He walks through them, marching past their music stands and heads out. Harry sits down. The men remain seated in awkward and despondent silence. Later, Andy stands outside in the darkness smoking a cigarette as the men head home. Gloria comes up to him.
Hiya.
Ta-da.
Hiya.
Moving words.
Andy's confused.
What?
Back there, Danny.
Oh, aye, daft old codger. If it weren't for Band, I reckon he'd pop his clogs. Listen, I wondered if you fancied some grub.
Where?
I don't know. Go posh if you want.
Andy.
All right, Phil.
Have you seen me dad?
I'm still inside, I think.
Phil heads inside.
Well?
All right.
They walk off together. Danny's in the band office, coughing into a handkerchief. Phil comes in behind him and stands in the doorway.
You all right, Dad?
Danny doesn't turn round.
Thank you for your support, son.
He closes his eyes and shakes his head.
Oh, listen, Phil, lad. I've been thinking of it.
He turns and perches on his desk.
Semi-finals, no place for scrap metal. Better find yourself a new bit of brass.
I'm not forking out for a new trombone just for one performance.
One? What about the Albert Hall? Now, normally I'd say get something cheap, but... Well, you're a bloody good trombonist, lad. You need a bloody good trombone.
Dad, I like the band. I love the band. We all do. But there's other things in life, you know, that's more important.
Danny's eyes gleam steadily.
Not in mine, there isn't.
He mops his mouth with his handkerchief.
What's that on your hanky?
Eh?
Danny glances at his handkerchief.
Oh, nowt.
He stuffs it in his trouser pocket.
Jane, come off my bike.
Phil stares at him fearfully. Danny feels his son's eyes bore into him and looks up. Phil relaxes his gaze, nods and sighs. A fish bar called In Cod We Trust. Inside the drab interior, a blonde, surly-looking waitress steps out from behind a curtain and strides across the floor to where Andy and Gloria are sitting together at a table smoking. She practically throws their cutlery and a bottle of vinegar down on the table.
Didn't realise we were going this posh. I'd have got dolled up.
Preoccupied, Andy doesn't look at her. Gloria takes a drag of her cigarette and exhales.
You know, back there when Danny said you had nought to be ashamed of. Is that right, then?
Gloria raises her eyes and sighs.
You work for bloody management, don't you?
Andy, I'm just...
Fuck.
I just compile surveys, Andy. Just do viability studies. Boring, maybe, but hardly something to be ashamed of.
No. Kept very quiet about it.
Because I knew you lot would get it all wrong, that's why.
Oh, aye.
I'm on the same side as you, Andy. I want Grimley to stay open, same as you do, and once it gets to review, I can help it stay open with my report.
Bollocks.
My figures show Grimley has a future. It's a profitable pit.
They already know that. They'll never reach review. The lads will go for redundancy. And that's another thing that you lot know. Just how much to offer to get a result.
Every miner I've spoken to is voting to stay put.
Do you think they tell you any different? 4-1 it'll go, for payoff.
You're voting to stay put.
Of course I bloody am.
Then you must have some hope.
No hope. Just principles. It's your first job for them, isn't it? Otherwise you would know, wouldn't you, that your report means as much to them as we do, bugger all. It's just a bloody PR exercise. So blind, naive people, people not unlike yourself, will think those good eggs at head office have been very fair, very reasonable, done their best, done the sums, and oh dear, they just don't add up. They'll have to close another pit. Shame. They won't even read the bugger. They've already made their decision, probably when you were still at college.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
He stares with wide blue eyes.
Anyway, if my job's so bloody irrelevant, how come you hate me so much?
I don't hate you.
The waitress brings plates of fish and chips.
Here's the attic.
Cheers.
The waitress plonks the plates down, then goes. Andy and Gloria begin to snigger. It's dark when they leave the fish bar, walking home side by side.
I chose Grimley, you know. They offer me other pits, but I chose Grimley for two reasons. First, because if I was going to help keep one pit alive, I wanted it to be this one. Second...
She looks down shyly, then gestures across the road.
Hey, isn't that where the old bus station was?
I didn't think you'd remember.
How could I forget?
I'm sorry, fumblings of a 14-year-old.
What do we call it? Top half only? Hardly been worth it at that age. Just kids.
Aye. I'll get better value now.
Well, that's inflation for you.
They stop outside the lantern. She turns and looks at him.
I did know your name. You know, when I called you Barry Andrews. I just didn't want you to think... I don't know. That it was etched forever on my brain.
Because it hasn't been, has it?
He looks into her eyes. Gloria returns his gaze without responding, then glances back at the pub.
Do you want to come up for a coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
She looks at him and blinks.
I haven't got any.
Phil walks along a pavement, hands dug deep in the pocket of his coat, purple beanie hat pulled firmly over his head. He stops by a shop window to look at a gleaming trombone in the display behind a mesh safety gate. He glances round, then tugs at the padlock on the safety gate, but is unable to open it. Jim and Ernie step up to him.
Hail, Phil.
Jesus Christ.
Do you like it so much you want to go back?
What?
Wakefield Prison.
What are you on about?
Shall we call it a day, eh?
Jim gestures him to go home, then heads off with Ernie. Phil eyes the trombone covetously, then walks on. Rita pulls a front door out and heads off down the garden path, passing Harry on his way in.
Evening, love.
Night.
Phil's at home. He opens the understairs cupboard, switches on a light, and after a rummage, pulls out a cardboard box containing a huge pink and black polka dot bow tie and a brightly coloured clown's outfit. He switches off the light and closes the door. Andy opens a door of the lantern and stealthily steps onto the street, closing the door behind him. Danny strolling by, pushing his bicycle.
All right, Andy, lad. What have you been up to?
Oh, a bit of extra practice, like.
Well, you're a genius, you, aren't you?
What?
Well, it takes a special talent, that, practising. Without your instrument.
Oh, I must have left it in there. I'll pick it up tomorrow.
Right. Gloria on good form, is she?
Andy looks at him guiltily.
Right, Andy, lad.
Night, Danny.
Shamefaced, Andy walks on. Danny heads away. Andy turns round to look back up at Gloria's bedroom, then walks on. As he goes, Gloria steps up to the bedroom window and peers down onto the street at Andy's departing figure. An apathetic Jim, Ernie, Harry, Phil and Andy walk across the car park at the colliery. Andy catches sight of a royal blue beetle parked by a building. He stares hard at it. Gloria, in white pretty blouse, lays plans out on a desk in front of her. She glances out the window to see Andy and his colleagues arrive at the colliery. She sits down with an air of anticipation. Andy drops his voting paper through a narrow slot in a battered black box. Jim fills out his voting paper and drops it into the box. The union rep sits at a table handing out the voting papers. Harry takes his and marks it. Greasley catches Phil's eye, winks and smiles. Minor after minor cast their vote, pushes their ballot paper through the narrow box and slams the box with their palm. A white light from a miner's lamp judders through the darkness as the miners drilled. The miners beaver away in the inky blackness, drilling and shoveling, then pushing a loaded cart along a track. Their grim faces peer out through the mesh of the lift cage as they stand side by side in silence. Like a huge gangway, the giant industrial conveyor belt rises above the colliery as the men troop across the yard in their orange boiler suits, luminous safety jackets and hard hats. Now in the communal shower room, Andy soaps and washes Harry's back. Jim and Ernie stand side by side, while Phil showers half-heartedly, head bent in thoughtful contemplation. Later, the men dress quietly in the locker room. Jim and Ernie chat in a corner. A preoccupied Andy ties his shoelace. Gloria, in white satin blouse and knee-length fitted skirt, sits in front of a laptop in an office, anxiously fidgeting with her neck chain. She spots a black chauffeur-driven Citroen pull up outside. Mackenzie, in long black coat and carrying a briefcase, gets out. He heads inside. Gloria stands up and hurries out of her office to confront him as he walks down a corridor.
Actually, rather busy, Gloria.
Yes, sir, so am I. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't busy for no reason. It's just some of the information I need. It's like getting blood out of a stone. I feel like I'm flogging a dead horse sometimes, and I...
Shall we stop talking in riddles, Gloria?
She hangs her head and smiles.
I'm worried that my report may be sort of... immaterial.
Your report is vital. Absolutely paramount. If this pit goes to review, and we hope it will, we have crucial decisions to make here, and we can't make them without detailed, accurate reports from highly qualified people such as yourself.
He looks at her kindly and smiles.
It's a tricky business, Gloria. All we want to do is get it right. Okay?
He winks and she nods. Mackenzie turns and heads into an office. Gloria considers what he said and nods to herself, then marches back down the corridor. Jim's driving his clapped-out Vauxhall out of the car park with Ernie, Andy, Phil and Harry when he catches sight of Gloria leaving the management offices.
Well, Bundy, look, there's your mate, Miss Glorious Tits. What's she doing here?
Jim's eyes narrow curiously. Sitting in the back, Andy looks uncomfortable. Jim swiftly backs up and pulls the car round in front of Gloria. She spots him approach and fidgets nervously with her car keys.
Hi, love, what's a nice girl like you doing in an horrible place like this?
Hiya.
She looks at Andy.
Hi, Andy.
He looks furtive.
Hiya.
I just came up to meet Andy out of work.
He's not out of work yet, love. Come back next week.
I just wondered if you wanted a quick practice, Andy.
No, I can't, love. He's going for a pint with us.
Oh. Right, well.
See ya. That's all right, isn't it, Andy? Nice pint and a chat. We can talk about price of fish, plight at third world, pros and cons at sweeper system, and why your bird's got management logo on a key ring.
Andy stares glumly ahead. The men sit round a table in the pub nursing pints. Simmel flicks balls across the pool table. Phil muses on the news.
Still, it don't make a devil incarnate, does it?
What does it make Andy here? That's what I want to know.
Lay off, you may, Jim. He said he didn't know. I mean, with legs like that around your back, you don't stop and ask for a reference, do you? Mistake anyone could have made.
Hey, by hell, we all wish we'd made it.
This isn't funny.
Now we're wrong with shagging management.
Yeah. It'll have been shagging us long enough.
Jim looks at Andy.
Oh, don't tell me, Andy. It weren't shagging. It were true love. Ah.
Simo approaches.
You playing, Andy?
No, he isn't. He's had enough fun and games for 1 week.
Not a kid anymore, Jim, all right?
All right. Old enough to be a scab, then.
Yeah.
Andy is standing behind him holding a pool cue. He steps towards Jim and stares hard at him.
It's all right, Andy. He doesn't mean it.
You don't mess around with words like that.
I'm sorry, Andy. Take it back. You're just a stupid fucker.
Andy hovers over him, smarting from the scab remark.
That's more like it.
He turns and walks away with Simo. Harry, who's doing a crossword in the newspaper, grins. Phil finishes his pint and gets up.
I'll catch you later, lads.
Harry.
Are you off, then?
A table laden with a birthday cake, buns, biscuits and a trifle in a room decorated with balloons. Phil is Mr. Chuckles.
Hello, kids! My name's Mr. Chuckles!
Hello, Mr. Chuckles!
Now, do you like card tricks?
Yeah.
Will you help me with this card trick? Come here. What you have to do is pick a card from there. Don't let me see it. And show it to all your friends so that they can all see it. Now, put it back anywhere you like. Tell me when you've done it. You done it?
No, I'm going to shuffle them all. Did you see what the card was?
You don't know what it was? Don't tell me. The card was the Jack of Hearts.
No.
Queen of Clubs?
No.
What was it then?
This is.
Correct.
Mr. Chuckles proposed to do another trick.
All right now, Scott. We're going to put your watch there, and we're going to fold this over once, twice, three times, four, just like that. All right?
The watch is folded into a scarf.
With this hammer, Scott, I want you to give that watch a great big smack.
No.
Phil places his hand on the watch and winces.
When I say the magic word, Scott.
Phil is led out.
This isn't your main job, is it?
I'm a miner.
The woman opens the front door.
A miner?
She holds out a £50 note. He takes it.
You remember them, love? Dinosaurs, dodos, miners.
He leaves the large, opulent house and the door is closed behind him. Sandra's at the checkout at Spar Supermarket. Vera is packing her groceries. Sausages and a packet of Always sanitary towels. Sandra empties her purse onto the counter. Vera counts it.
Sorry, Sandra, a bit short, love.
How much?
150.
So are you.
What's it to be?
What about them airplane things, Mum?
What?
Them things with wings on.
Well, I need them.
She takes shampoo from her shopping bag.
Yeah, I'll have to put that back, will you? Will you? Soap. Sorry, Vera. Me and Soames, you know, not what you call best of friends. Me and money. Total friggin' strangers.
Sorry, love. Still need another 60.
Sandra's face falls.
I tell you what. Give it us next week, all right?
Are you sure?
Vera nods and holds out her receipt.
Don't forget your receipt.
Vera indicates a fiver she's folded into the receipt. Tears well in Sandra's eyes. She holds out her shaking hand for it, then clutches Vera's hand and gives her a little smile of gratitude. Cuddling her baby to her, she takes her groceries and leads her son out of the shop. Phil, still wearing his Mr. Chuckles clown's outfit, blows on his new gleaming trombone as he heads home. He spots a couple of repo men carry the TV out of his house. Sandra and the children try to stop them.
Hey! Bastard!
Phil rushes towards them in his oversized red clown shoes.
Bastard! What are you fucking doing, eh? You're fucking playing that!
I told you, pal! It's crazy!
Phil removes his red curly wig and hat.
You're all right.
He throws them down.
Right.
He looks at Sandra holding the baby.
Just give us a bit of time, eh?
Been 10 years, mate.
Payday's payday, pal. Especially when it's 12 grand.
12?
Ah, it's that interest, innit? It's a bugger.
What about...
Phil looks at them pleadingly.
Can you wait till 21st?
21st?
Oh, ah. Coco the scabber.
Phil hangs his head.
We'll be back with truck.
Truck, what for?
Contents. Until you pay up, like.
The suited hard-nosed thug and his heavy begin to leave.
Hey.
To the heavy.
If you touch my kids again, I'll fucking kill you!
The heavy punches him in the face. Phil collapses. The heavy goes. Sandra helps Phil to sit up. One of his kids picks up the new trombone. Sandra grabs it.
What the frigging hell's this?
Phil takes it.
Oh, it's a frigging dent, that's what it is.
Sandra looks at him sadly as he examines the dent.
Andy Barra lent it me. He'll go frigging barmy.
The cool white light of an early morning sun falls over the colliery. Inside, the black ballot boxes are tipped upside down on a table and emptied out, and a row of men begin to count the votes. Danny wheels his bicycle out through his backyard onto a street. Mrs. Betty Foggan is passing.
Hiya, Danny, love. You well?
Oh, I can't complain, Betty.
What time did they announce the result, do you know?
It was about 5-ish or something, I think. I didn't know you were that bothered, pet.
All town bothered, love.
Danny looks chuffed.
Can't do without Pitt.
Danny's taken aback.
Oh, that? I thought you were talking about semi-finals.
Honest, Danny. A day like today, you think anyone's interested in some daft football match?
She walks on. Rita passes Harry on his way out of the house.
All right, love.
That's it, you bugger off and blow your bloody trumpet.
Blimey, a conversation.
She turns on him.
Harry, in a month's time when you're at home all day and there's nowt but Doll coming in, at least I can sit there too and know that I did summat. It weren't much, but it was best I could do, and at least it was summat.
What are you on about?
10 years ago, before the strike, you were so full of fight. Packed full of passion you were. Now you're just done out. All you do is blow your bloody trumpet.
Aye, but at least...
She looks at him.
At least what?
He raises his head to meet her gaze.
people listen to us.
She looks at him in astonishment, then sighs. Harry hangs his head.
Go on, sod off.
She steps into the house and closes the front door behind her. Rattled, Harry walks on, then swings round and calls back.
And it's a bloody euphonium!
He nods, then heads away. Vera and Ida are under dryers and a hairdresser's.
No, I can't tell a lie, Ida. I would never want for brass bands before. But when you hear that sound, when you're near that sound, don't half grab you, don't it?
Aye, it does that. But you know, folk like Danny, it's taken over their lives.
Ooh, I'd never let that happen.
The dryers are lifted off, revealing two heads set in curlers. They admire their new purple rinses.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Danny stands on the street with his clipboard.
All right, Bernard.
Danny ticks his clipboard. Jim and Ernie arrive.
Jim, Ernie.
Danny ticks their names off as they make their way into Arkwright's bus with their instruments. Vera and Ida appear with their purple rinses.
Hi, Danny. Hello, Danny.
Hi.
He clocks their hair.
Hi, Harry. Mechana for Tandy.
Phil arrives, looking the worst for wear with a battered face.
Bloody hell, son. What's happened to you?
Sorry, Dad. Bit of a domestic, like.
Well, you know this is a special...
Danny stares at Phil's face.
Sandra did that? To you?
No.
He looks into his father's eyes. A wave of recognition flits across Danny's face.
Go on, get on bus. Get it cleaned up.
Danny scribbles on his clipboard.
Bangles the deportment prize, any road.
On board the bus, Andy's standing up, tucking his things away in the overhead rack. He looks up to see Gloria stepping tentatively down the bus, turns away and sits down. She makes her way to the back and takes a seat. Andy glances round at her. Danny addresses the band.
Hey, we're going to win this one, Danny. Look, your Phil's got a new trombone.
The image of Phil and his new trombone are reflected in the rearview mirror. Touched, Danny winks at his son and smiles.
All right, Stanley. Halifax, here we come.
Danny conducts his band on an erected stage in the elegant, columned, 18th century Peace Hall courtyard in Halifax. A large crowd have gathered to listen. Phil Sandra tries to control the kids at home.
Oh, shit, will you? I'm fighting all the time.
The result of the ballot.
Vote for redundancy, 798.
Phil's heckler clenches his fist in triumph. Other miners close their eyes in despair. Stunned, they remain seated while some of their colleagues stand up and clap, then file out of the room. Greasley and his mustachioed union colleague look depressed in defeat. Bedraggled and worn out, Sandra stands before a mountain of laundry. She puts her hand into the pocket of Phil's Mr. Chuckles outfit and finds a folded note. It's from White's second-hand shop and reads, "Purchase of one brass trombone. Received £50. Still to pay £250, P. White." Sandra stares at it. Mackenzie's outside on his mobile. He laughs and looks happy. Sandra opens her front door to the repo men. They've brought a lorry for the furniture. Sandra clutches the baby to her as one man steps past her, heading inside. Miners, some downbeat, some cheered, walk past the women's protest camp outside the colliery. Rita watches them, despondent. Mackenzie's driven through the men in his black Citroen. He looks a little uncomfortable at first, then raises up a newspaper to read. A group of miners wearing overalls are reflected in a pool of water on the ground as they march sadly out of the colliery. Gradually, the women join the mass exodus home, leaving the colliery for the last time. Carrying sleeping bags, blankets, and now redundant placards, they walk side by side with the men, heads hanging united in despair, with the wind gently blowing through their hair. One miner sits slumped on the ground. A small dog idly scratches his ear nearby. Rita, pulling her coat tightly round her, walks alongside another woman. The Reaper men carry out Sandra and Phil's sofa. Sandra, clutching the baby and a couple of framed photographs to her, goes to the three boys who are huddled together in the middle of the floor. She kneels down by them and pulls them closer to her. In Halifax, the Grimley Colliery Band are putting on a fine show. Standing amongst the audience, Vera and Ida, with their shocking purple hair, bob up and down proudly to the sound.
The Grimley Colliery Band!
The band are ecstatic, punching into the air, cheering and hugging one another. Everyone wants to shake Danny's hand and pat him on the back. Back in Grimley, the Arkwright bus drives away and leaves the band on the road, staring in silence at their desolate colliery. Danny and Harry walk slowly towards the yellow and black sign for Grimley Colliery. In red paint, the words, "We fought and lost," are written across it, beneath a poppy wreath draped over it. Danny stares at it, checks his emotions, and moves away. Rita approaches Harry as he stares grimly at the sign.
Harry.
Harry turns round to face her.
Rita, love.
She stands in front of him and looks up.
4-1 against it went.
Her chin trembles.
4-1, Harry.
He pulls her to him and holds her as she sobs. Gloria glances at them shamefaced, then hangs her head.
Still.
She looks up at him.
See a bit more of each other now, eh?
Phil watches his father, carrying his music satchel, walk slowly towards the colliery, then sink down onto his knees.
Dad?
Danny collapses. Phil races towards him. The other miners race after him.
Jesus Christ!
He loosens his father's collar.
Someone get an ambulance, quick! Everybody can't breathe! Right, just back off, will you? Come on!
Don't crowd it,
Deathly white, Danny's eyes roll.
Come on, breathe!
Somebody call for that ambulance.
Danny struggles for breath while Phil rubs his chest.
Oh, come on, hurry up, will you?
Come on.
Red double doors open and Phil enters the practice hall where the rest of the band sit round waiting.
How is it, Phil?
I don't know. He hasn't woke up yet. They just said there'd be more news tomorrow.
Right. We're just having a collection for him. Annie?
The men throw money into a tin which Jim passes round to Gloria.
You're still here, love?
She holds out a tenner.
I reckon it's got to be Terra now, don't you?
He snatches the tenner from her and throws it into the tin. Gloria's shocked. She looks round and catches Andy's eye. He looks away. She stands up and eyes Jim.
I'm on your side. I always was.
Jim gestures her to go. Gloria walks up to Andy.
Andy?
He smokes a cigarette and doesn't look up. Finally, Gloria goes.
Andy?
Andy tosses his contribution into Jim's tin. Phil steps forward and drops some money into the collection.
Not flowers, all right, Jim, not grapes. Get him some that he wants, eh?
Simo drops money onto the pool table.
You sure about this, Andy, mate? What about finals?
Andy places his trumpet down as a wager and looks at Simo.
What finals?
Simo looks at the trumpet as he places the pool balls on the table. Andy picks up a cue and polishes the end. Andy broodily watches Simo pocket the number 8 and sips his pint.
Andy, I don't want to fall out, mate. You're my main source of income.
Don't worry, Simo. I've lost more this week than a bloody trumpet.
Phil's walking home, still in his band uniform. He sees Sandra packing up a red van.
Sam?
She glances round and closes the back doors.
Sandra?
They came! Took bloody lot!
She's holding the baby.
I warned you, Phil.
Why, Sam, no. Look, don't be...
His eyes flit from the van to Sandra.
Not now.
Seems as good a time as any. What with there being nowhere to sit?
She cradles the baby.
Dad's collapsed.
Aye, I heard. I'm sorry.
She gets into the passenger side of the van with the baby and closes the door. As the van drives off, Phil's three sons peer out sadly at him through the back window. They hold their hands up to the glass. Phil raises his hand in a lonely goodbye. He watches the van disappear round a corner. Day. A desolate street in Grimley, devoid of life except for an overhead bird. Phil, wearing his Mr. Chuckles outfit, opens his front door and steps inside. He flicks a light switch in the hall, but nothing happens. He flicks it again. Still nothing. He tries the switch in the sitting room. Nothing.
Are you fuckers?
He flings his bag at a wall, then flip-flops in his clown shoes towards the bleak, empty kitchen. He hurries to answer the phone. He sits on a wooden crate and picks up the receiver.
Sandra?
Phil? Harry. He's set for one final performance.
A sister checks Danny's pulse as he lies immobile in a darkened room. She lays the back of her hand gently on his forehead, then places her palm on it.
What on earth?
She walks to a window and pulls up a blind. Down on the grass by some trees is the Grimley Colliery Band in their purple and black uniforms, wearing their miner's hats with the lamps shining out. Harry conducts them. Phil stares at the ground, his eyes glazed with sadness and loss. Andy, minus his trumpet, whistles the tune. The men, some old, some with fresh young faces, stand side by side, in tribute to Danny. Inside, the sister orders a nurse.
Nurse, go down there at once and get rid of them.
Leave them be.
The sister steps up to Danny.
Mr. Ormond Royd, how are you feeling?
Death's door. The bastards still take the piss.
Yes, I am sorry about this racket. We'll stop it, don't worry.
Stop this racket. You'll wake up in the next ward.
She eyes him as she checks his pulse. Danny listens, then looks at the sister.
Is it going like shit off a shovel?
If by that you mean fast, yes, it is, rather.
Danny closes his eyes and listens.
It always does when they play this one.
Outside, Phil plays his trombone, and as he stares up at his father's hospital window, tears well in his eyes and trickle down his face. Harry looks at the band, then switches his coal miner's lamp off. Jim follows suit, then Phil, Andy, Ernie, and all the men. A nurse steps outside and calls out to them.
Message for Mr. Ormondroyd.
He's awake?
Yeah. He says Teleron's too soft.
Phil smiles at Andy, who, acknowledging Danny's point, grins back. The nurse heads inside. Harry stands beside Phil.
Phil, lad, I reckon it'd be best coming from you. I'm just packing in. Not going to find us.
Harry walks sadly away. The men stand round Danny's bed. He holds a gift-wrapped present.
You shouldn't have, you know, lads. Really. Should have brought me flowers or something. Grapes. Murder a bunch of grapes.
He unwraps the present to reveal a long wooden case. He opens it. Inside's a baton.
Bloody hell.
Right, thank you. The concert's over. It's past 11, and Mr. Ormondroyd must have some sleep. Thank you.
See you, Danny.
And I'd prefer any future visits to be made in visiting hours, preferably without trumpets.
It's a euphonium.
Hey, lads. Sounded good, mind. Out there. Keep playing like that, we'll murder them at bloody finals.
Harry looks uncomfortable. Jim leans over Phil's shoulder and whispers to him. Phil nods. The men file out, leaving Phil alone with Danny. Phil goes to sit on the side of his bed.
You're in a bit of trouble, son.
He's not, Dad.
You seem a bit upset, like.
Of course I'm upset. My old man's poorly.
Aye, well, we'll both get over that, won't we?
Phil avoids eye contact. Danny observes him fidget with his trombone.
Nice bit of brass. Cheap, yeah.
Phil looks at him and nods, then points out the dent.
It's our son, anyway.
Phil stares ahead. Danny looks at him.
It matters, you know, that trombone. To me, any road.
Aye.
Unable to look at Danny, Phil suddenly springs to his feet.
I'll best be off. Let you get some shut-eye.
Aye. Say hello to Sandra and kids.
Yeah, they said, you know, get well.
What alongside Arthur Mullins every day of his working life. You know that. When they cut him open...
Dad, don't.
They say when they opened up his lungs, they were run out in there, but coal dust, slack. Slack everywhere. Took him a week to get the slab clean.
Dad.
Phil manages a smile.
You'll be all right.
You going to tell me lies all bloody night?
He looks into his son's eyes. Phil looks back meekly.
No.
He shakes his head.
You're right, son. You're right. Go on, be off with you. I'll be out of here in time for final.
Phil heads out. He glances back once with a smile, then goes. Danny muses to himself.
One way or the other.
The colliery's huge steel framework is silent and still. The miners, in casual dress, file past a window to hand in their boiler suits, hard hats and lamps, safety jackets and boots. One man shakes his head in disbelief. All trudge forward in quiet despair. Amongst them, Phil, Andy, Ernie, Jim and Harry. Mackenzie's in his luxurious wood-panelled office with two other men.
Different after recent events.
Gloria.
Just thought I'd bring you the viability study.
The men stare at her blankly. Gloria waits.
Ah, right. Yes. Put it there. Thank you.
Gloria goes to put it down in a tray, then pauses and turns to face Mackenzie.
Will you be reading it?
Gloria, it would have been very valuable if the Grimley miners had decided to go to a review, but as you know, sadly...
You made them an offer they couldn't refuse.
None of this is simple, Gloria.
All right, I'll make it simple. I'll tell you some facts the way I see them, and you tell me if I've got it wrong.
Miss Mullins.
One, I write reports that no one will ever read. They have to be seen to be written, but they're not written to be seen. Two, Grimley was a profitable pit, says so in here. Three, the decision to close it wasn't made... Today, it was made weeks ago.
Wrong.
He looks at her.
2 years ago.
Gloria shocked. Mackenzie begins to smile.
Cole is history, Miss Mullins.
Gloria flings the report at him, then marches out. Mackenzie picks it up and throws it on his desk. Jim, Ernie, Harry, Phil and Andy walk grimly across the colliery car park towards Jim's car. Jim unlocks the door and they begin to get in. Andy staring into the distance.
I'll catch you later, lads.
Jim looks to where Andy's staring and sees Gloria in the distance standing by her blue beetle looking down at the colliery. He turns to Andy and shakes his head, then gets into the car. The others drive off. Andy's with Gloria.
Look, for years, bloody years, no good's ever happened to me. The only reason I'd get up in mornings to see if me luck had changed, but it never bloody has. And it was just beginning to get worse with pit closing, losing me job, and then what happens? Gloria Mullins. Love of me bloody life walks into practice hall. Bloody hell, I thought maybe life's not so bad. But is it buggery? She's only fucking management.
And now that's what you've been doing.
Yeah, well, let's just call that sleeping with the enemy.
I'm not the enemy. I'm like you. Unemployed.
He looks at her.
I told them to stuff it.
You off back down south, then?
Well, hardly welcome here.
Reckon they all know now. You're only trying to help. Thing is, if help comes to summit, then you're a hero. If it comes to now, you're just another meddler.
Is that what you reckon?
I reckon your heart's in the right place, but you never did out to prove it.
I'll say ta-ra, then.
He looks at her for several moments, then nods. She nods disappointedly, turns and heads back to her car. As a golden orbed sun sets, Andy watches her go, his face fraught with anger and emotion. She turns around to him as she reaches her car.
Something good will happen soon, Andy. Hope it's at Albert Hall.
Doubt it somehow. We're not going.
What?
They worked it out. It'd cost $3,000 or something.
Gloria takes this in.
No, the band's dead. It died with everything else.
Gloria hangs her head. Standing on a hill overlooking the colliery, Andy turns to gaze upon it. It's cold and bleak. Andy smokes a cigarette and heads into a building outside which hangs a sign saying, Rescue Room, Grimley Main Colliery, Job Search Programme. Inside, he spots Harry.
Harry?
He claps Ernie's back.
Right, Ernie.
Hands in his pockets, he walks over towards a board where Jim's reading various notices on job vacancies.
Jim?
Right. Jim nods, then returns to looking at the board. Andy steps over to Phil.
All right, Phil. All right, Andy, lad.
Out in.
There's a machinist wanted. Any good at button stitching?
I'll take anything.
Well, thank Christ I found you, look.
He pulls up his jumper over exuberantly to reveal a great big hole in his shirt. Andy frowns.
How's your dad?
Phil's twirling his beanie hat round in his hand.
How'd he take it about us packing in?
Phil lowers his gaze.
Oh, hey, Phil, come on, you got to tell him, you know. I mean, before final.
I'm going to. They're a while yet, though, ain't they?
Saturday.
Phil nods, smiles nervously and continues to twirl his beanie hat. Later, he sits at Danny's bedside.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
What, Sandra and the kids? I heard all about that. Don't fret, they'll be back.
Phil steels himself.
Dad.
Just one day. They won't let me out. For one sodding day.
He's holding his baton in his hand.
Dad, look.
I guess you might as well give these to Harry, then.
Pages of sheet music.
Wish him good luck.
He passes them to Phil.
Was up all night doing them?
Aye. Right.
Phil sits on the crate in a corner of his living room, staring blankly ahead. The room is stripped bare of all furniture and carpets. Curtains hang over the windows. A white telephone sits at his feet. and his son's football lies idly in the middle of the floor. He picks up the phone as Mr. Chuckles.
Harvest Festival. Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know too much about Harvest Festival. But I do know a story about God.
The children and teachers listen.
So God was creating man, all right? And his little assistant came up to him and he said, "Hey, we've got all these bodies left, but we're right out of brains, we're right out of hearts, and we're right out of vocal cords." And God said, "Fuck it, sew them up anyway. Smack smiles on their faces and make them talk out their asses." And lo, God created the Tory party.
Come on. May God forgive you.
God?
He's in a church.
All right. Well, now there's a fella.
A statue of Christ.
I mean, what's he doing, eh? He can take John Lennon. He can take those three young lads down at Ainslie Pit. He's even thinking of taking my old man. And Margaret bloody Thatcher lives. But what's he studying playing at, eh?
The children stare at him with wide, innocent eyes. Phil hangs his head, then looks up at the kids.
You've been great. My name's Coco the Scab.
He waves to them, then goes, flip-flopping down some steps in his huge red shoes. Sandra sits on a roundabout in a playground with Shane, her son.
Grandad? What's Grandad got to do with it?
Dad said when people are as poorly as Grandad is, you got to do special things for them.
Shane, love, your dad didn't buy trombone for your Grandad. He bought it for himself.
He said Grandad's gonna die, but at least Dad getting a trombone's gonna make him die happy. That's what he said.
Sandra raises her eyes and considers this.
Mom.
What, love?
How the hell do you die happy?
Oh, we'll find a way.
She smokes.
I don't like seeing Dad sad, Mom. I'd sooner see him sad than not see him at all.
She smiles at her son and touches his cheek. It's dark. Two security men patrol the colliery with dogs.
What's that? What's that?
They shine their torches up.
What is it?
Mr. Chuckles is hanging from the colliery steel structure.
Jesus Christ!
Phil struggles, clutching at the rope around his neck. Danny opens his eyes a little to see a trolley being wheeled past his open door with two huge red feet sticking up. Danny lies there a moment, then raises his head in alarm.
Philip.
He gets up. Danny sits on a bench near the outpatient's ward, Phil's beside him wrapped in a blanket with his head turned away from him.
I mean, what the bloody hell were you playing at, lad? You lost your marbles?
Maybe I've lost everything else. Wife, kids, house, job, self-respect, hope.
His neck is bloodstained and bruised.
But then that's nowt, is it, Dad?
He looks at Danny tearfully.
Because it's music that matters.
Danny looks at him in bewilderment.
The band's packed in anyway.
Danny's shocked. He turns to look at Phil. He puts his hand on Phil's shoulder.
Is this man bothering you?
Phil looks at his father and a tear trickles down his cheek.
Of course he is. He's me dad.
Danny holds a handkerchief to his mouth. He shares a look with his son. Phil breaks down. Danny tries to mop up Phil's tears with his handkerchief, then holds it to his face as he weeps. Phil sits on a canal wall, holding his trombone and staring into the murky water. Jim, Ernie, Harry and Andy stroll up to him.
Phil, lad.
Say, all right?
What are you up to?
Feeding the fucking ducks. What's it look like?
His neck still badly marked.
We heard about,
Harry glances at Andy.
We're on our way to hospital to see you. Hey, Andy, Dad.
Oh, aye. He'd be dead chuffed with a visit from you lot. I tell you, if he were up and about, we'd all be in intensive bloody care.
All right, you told him. Maybe we'll visit him next week, then, eh?
You coming for a pint, mate?
Drink with scabs, do you? I voted for money. You know that?
Jim inhales and lowers his gaze. Harry shifts uncomfortably.
Come on, Phil, lad. Stop being a bloody drama queen and come and have a wet with us. Anyway, there's enough bloody rubbish in this canal already.
Jim takes Phil's arm and leads him away. The others follow. Later in the pub, Phil's sitting round a table with the others.
He just shook his head. Can't tell you. It was like... lights just went out. I mean, there he is, coughing up coal. And all we can do is break his bloody heart. Poor sod's got nothing left to live for.
He sips a pint. Jim looks up.
Hey, up.
Gloria steps in, holding a checkbook, and approaches them cautiously. Andy stands up.
Can I get you a drink?
No, it's all right. I just wanted to show you something.
She drops the checkbook onto the table and sighs.
New bank account. Grimley Brass Band. There's $3,000 in there. If now tells, it'll get you to Albert Hall.
Is your money?
She nods.
I don't want it. It's dirty money. I prefer it to be brass.
Jim sneers.
Must be awful, love. Having that much guilt, you got to buy your way out of it.
Ernie and Harry pull faces at him. Gloria looks at him.
Jim, I'm just doing what I was always doing. Meddling. Difference is, this time we've not lost before we start.
The others turn to Jim. He looks round at their faces, then eyes Gloria.
And you'd want to play with us, yeah?
I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing it for you. And Danny.
Phil smiles up at her. Everyone's eyes are on Jim, watching him anxiously as he finishes his pint and sets his glass down. Finally, he looks at Gloria.
I hope you budgeted for booze.
She looks at him and waits.
Danny would want us to win, wouldn't he? Well, we're not going to win without a flaming flugel, are we?
She smiles and mouths no. Realisation suddenly hits Andy. He gets up and hurries to a phone.
Simo?
Can you get a Simo and Black?
Yeah, you haven't vlogged it, have you? Right, your own plays my 20. What?
He looks peeved.
All right, bastard, 30. OK.
Simo shoots pool.
Yes!
Come on, Andy. Only the number 8 remains on the table. It's Andy's turn. He shoots. The cue ball skids past the black. Then hits the side, rolls back towards the number 8, and pockets it.
Well done, Andy!
Andy picks up his trumpet. Phil faces the sister.
I said no, Mr. Ormondroyd. He's asleep. Most people are at 2 in the morning. Leave a message. He'll get it the moment he wakes up, all right?
Phil picks up a pen and paper from her desk and turns round. He pauses to look through the glass-pane door at his father, who lies with his back to the sister's office, then turns to write. Danny lies in bed, eyes open, listening through earphones. Arkwright's bus is bedecked with blooms. Albert Hall or bust is written across the front windscreen. Crowds gather to cheer and throw streamers as the Grimley Colliery Band climb on board. Vera and Ida, with ever darker shades of purple streaks through their hair, climb on. Andy and Gloria climb on, Phil gets on, and Harry waves to the well-wishers and climbs aboard. The bus departs. On board the balloon-filled bus, everyone is in jubilant form except Phil, who stares morosely ahead. The bus careers on, its occupants now mostly dozing. Gloria's head rests on Andy's shoulder. Jim and Ernie sit together, as do Vera and Ida. Phil sits awake and staring ahead. The traffic backs up approaching London. The Arkwright bus cruises along in the bus lane. The Thames and St. Paul's in the distance. Arkwright's bus reaches the Albert Hall for the National Brass Band Championships. Some of the men unload their instruments from the back. Harry snaps a photo of the Victorian red brick and terracotta Albert Hall, which is shaped like a Roman amphitheatre. V Vera and Ida rush to join in on a group photo of the Grimley Colliery Band in front of the Albert Hall. Harry leads the troop inside. Inside, the championships are in progress. Vera and Ida, with purple jackets to match their hair, walk down an aisle and take their seats in the packed auditorium. Backstage, Andy and some of the band are warming up.
Brickhouse and Drastrick Band, you have 2 minutes. Brickhouse and Drastrick, 2 minutes.
In the auditorium, Vera and Ida have taken to knitting in their seats while they wait for the Grimley band to appear. Some of the audience sitting around them are bemused. In their dressing room...
Grimley Colliery, you have 2 minutes.
Ernie listens.
Grimley Colliery, 2 minutes.
Ah, hell, I bet she's glad the floor's up, okay?
Harry addresses them all.
Okay, lads, let's do it. For 1,000 redundant miners and one poorly one... Let's do it.
At the hospital, Danny's bed is empty.
Nurse! Quickly, it's Mr. Ormondroyd! He's gone!
He's left his pyjamas and Phil's note, which reads, "We're going." On stage, Harry conducts the band. Phil hears the baby's cry, looks down into the audience and sees Sandra looking up at him smiling, with their little girl on her knee and the boys beside her. Behind her sits a proud Rita next to Vera and Ida. Frail and sickly and wearing his bandmaster's outfit, steps up onto the stage behind the men. Harry spots him. Danny smiles to him. Harry gestures to Phil to look round. Phil does so and sees his father. Danny smiles and nods at him. Elated, Phil turns round and continues to play. Harry conducts with gusto. Punches his fist delightedly. Harry gestures for the band to stand up, then he turns to face the audience and takes a deep bow. Sandra and the boys, Rita, Vera and Ida, stand to cheer and clap. Bursting with pride and emotion, Danny stands behind the band and applauds. Gloria turns round to Andy, beaming. He grins broadly and looks round the auditorium in awe. Danny sits with the band as they await the results.
First prize and champions of Great Britain, Grimley Collier.
Andy stands and punches the air, then hugs Gloria. The band are ecstatic as one of the judges carries a huge silver cup in their direction. He holds it out. The band part for Danny to step through and receive it, clapping him on the back as he passes them. Danny holds up his hands to the judge to gesture, wait, then steps up onto a podium and stands behind a microphone. He looks out over the auditorium.
This band behind me will tell you that that trophy means more to me than aught else in the whole world. But they'd be wrong. Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter. Us winning this trophy won't mean bugger all to most people. But us refusing it, like what we're going to do now, well, then it becomes news, doesn't it?
The press snap photos.
You see what I mean? That way I'll not just be talking to myself, will I? Because over the last 10 years, this bloody government has systematically destroyed an entire industry. Our industry. And not just our industry. Our communities, our homes, our lives. All in the name of progress, and for a few lousy bob. I'll tell you something else you might not know as well. A fortnight ago, this band's pit were closed. Another 1,000 men lost their jobs. And that's not all they lost. Most of them lost the will to win a while ago. A few of them even lost the will to fight. But...
He looks back at the band.
When it comes to losing the will to live, to breathe... Point is, if this lot were seals or whales, you'd all be up in bloody arms. But they're not, are they? No, no, they're not. They're just ordinary, common garden, honest, decent human beings. And not one of them with an ounce of bloody hope left. Oh, aye. They can knock out a bloody good tune. But what the fuck does that matter?
His eyes brim with tears as he looks round the auditorium. The audience look at him solemnly. Ida sobs. Sandra's face is filled with pain. The Grimley band watch him in silence.
Now I'm going to take my boys out onto the town. Thank you.
He hurries off the podium. Rita, Vera, Ida, Sandra and the children stand and begin to clap. Others follow. The band clap and slowly leave the stage. Jim pushes back through them and picks up the silver cup from the judge's podium. One of the judges tries to stop him.
Oh, he said he wasn't accepting it.
Don't toss a bloody soft.
Jim marches off with the cup. Gradually, more and more people stand and clap. The band are riding round on the top level of an open-roofed bus. Harry walks down the aisle with the cup. Yay! Phil.
Are you coming back, Sand?
Dunno.
I've got a chair now. I mean, I've no frigging house, but I've got a chair. Well, sort of a chair.
It all sounds very tempting.
Jim nudges Gloria and gives her a thumbs up.
All right.
To Andy.
Is that a thank you?
More than that. Never known him gush like that before.
Well, I suppose that's what Yorkshiremen are famous for. Not showing their feelings.
She looks at Andy.
Right.
Suddenly he puts his arm round her and kisses her passionately on the mouth. He draws back.
I'm not going to show mine either.
He kisses her again. As they pass Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament, Danny addresses his band.
All right then, lads and lasses. Land of open bloody glory, eh?
Words appear across the screen. Since 1984, there have been 140 pit closures in Great Britain, at the cost of nearly a quarter of a million jobs. ITFC audio description by Aileen Downey. Thank you.
Film 4's Double Take continues at 9 tomorrow with another musical tale of everyday survival in Northern England. Robert Carlyle gets his kid off in the outrageous comedy, The Full Monty. But